today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Just going back to the rises in the toll prices, and I had said to you that I was going to find out when it was going to come into effect. The hikes have been approved by Transport Infrastructure Ireland and are going to come into force in the new year. And as we said, they're set to rise by around 60 cent per journey after a decision was made to increase them in line with inflation. One listener texted in to say, how can the government rise the toll charges if they don't own them? They sold it years ago. Well, as I mentioned, it's kind of a private-public partnership with the companies, so it's not necessarily all to do with the government that are increasing the prices of the tolls, but they have been approved by Transport Infrastructure Ireland and will come into effect in the new year. Now, a further member of the board of the National Governing Body for Equestrian Sports has resigned, leaving the chairman of the organisation its sole remaining director. Horsesport Ireland, which is based in Naas, received more than €7 million in public funding this year, has been dealing with a growing governance controversy over a major boardroom fallout. Well, on the line is reporter Jack Power. He's a reporter with the Irish Times, and he's been covering this story over the last number of days. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning.
You might put that into context for us then and give us a bit of the background about what's been going on with Horsesport Ireland.
Yeah, so there's been kind of tensions brewing in this organisation for quite a while, a good few months or most of this year. And it's really kind of blown up earlier this month when two of the board directors resigned, and then several days later, another four of the directors resigned. And as I said yesterday, one of the two remaining directors resigned as well. So this really relates to a split in the board, in particular over a number of issues. One of them was the position of the current chief executive, Dennis Duggan. At the start of this month, we'd reported, based on sources, that a majority of the board had voted to dismiss Mr. Duggan from his position. At present, he still remains there, but kind of on foot of that kind of controversial decision, that's when we saw the first two resignations to the board, I believe somewhat in protest over that. And then four of the members who had been expressing concerns about the governance and the running of the organisation resigned several days later. Many of them were appointed to the board by the minister, so as I understand it, have written to the minister setting out the reasons for their resignation. And this, as I said, relates to controversy over the position of the chief executive. It also relates to an issue where Horsesport Ireland applied for a number of contracts that the state were putting out for services they'd previously run, to run a breeding service, to run another equestrian service, and then to provide marketing services kind of for the wider horse sport industry. So the Department of Agriculture advertised three contracts, and organisations or private companies could bid to run those state contracts for state funding. Now, Horsesport Ireland won two of them, but they didn't win the contract to provide marketing services. That was given to an affiliate organisation, the Irish Horse Board, which is kind of a membership body for horse breeders. And that caused significant disquiet from some members who were annoyed that they'd lost out on that contract. And then what Horsesport Ireland did effectively was they filed a legal case in the High Court to take a judicial review against the Department of Agriculture to try and overturn that decision. Several directors felt this was an incredibly rash move, given the Department of Agriculture are the Horsesport Ireland's main funder. I think they provided them with $5 million in funding this year. So effectively they were taking a legal action against their biggest public funder. And that is yet to play out in terms of the results or the outcome of that judicial review. You'd expect there would be significant costs with going to the High Court. You'd imagine upwards of $80,000 just to take the case. So that was another issue that caused a lot of kind of tension and concern amongst the board of Horsesport Ireland. And really that kind of kick-started this kind of domino effect. That legal case was taken, I think, in the start of October, the middle of October, and that was filed. And we reported on that at the time, which really kind of put this issue, onto the radar of national media. And so those two issues together along with other kind of complaints that some directors had had over how the organisation was being run, really contributed to many of the directors resigning, as I said, in recent days.
Yeah, we've seen a couple more then over the last day or so, and as I mentioned there in the introduction, Joe Reynolds is the only sole remaining member of the board. He's the chair. He hasn't resigned as of yet.
Yeah, absolutely. He's still in place, and as you said, is the only remaining director. So this really, it's quite unclear as to what will happen now. You know, as I said, Minister for Agriculture Charlie McConlogue, he has the power to appoint. I think it's around four of those people that resigned were his appointees to the board. So he would have the power to appoint four people to that board, but it's unclear as to what the plan is. He's currently kind of considering kind of what to do in relation to this. I think he said he'll make a decision based on the best interests of the sector and the industry. But in the wider industry, we have seen other affiliated organisations like Show Jumping Ireland, Dressage Ireland, and other kind of figures kind of really come out against what's happening at the moment in Horse Sport Ireland. So I think we had five or six kind of senior figures in the equestrian industry sign a letter to the minister, basically calling for Joe Reynolds, the chairman of the Horse Sport Ireland board and only remaining director, calling for him to step down or calling for the minister to use his powers to remove Mr. Reynolds. I was speaking to Mr. Reynolds yesterday and seeing if he had any kind of comment to make on the current turmoil, and he just said at the moment he had no further comment to make. Horse Sport Ireland themselves have said they're trying to work to address this issue. You know, one source in Horse Sport Ireland was kind of bemoaning to me yesterday that this issue really relates to a really kind of frayed and fractured split on the board, and some other groups in the equestrian world have kind of come down on one side and some have come down on the other side of the split. So it's really kind of, at the moment, it's an issue that's kind of somewhat tearing the equestrian industry in two over which side people stand on, whether they support the current direction of Horse Sport Ireland or whether they would have support for several of the board members, who would include people like former TD Lucinda Creighton, former Fine Gael and Renewal leader, who resigned really in kind of protest or opposition to the current direction of travel in the organisation.
And Jack, a note as well from your report yesterday that politicians are now considering calling Horse Sport Ireland to appear before the Oireachtas Agriculture Committee to answer questions about its governance, and in particular Sinn Féin TD Matt Carthy.
Yeah, so Matt Carthy, I think on Tuesday he wrote to the other members of that Oireachtas Committee basically seeing if there was support to bring Horse Sport Ireland in, given the significant amount of public funding they receive. I think all in it's around 7 million a year between the department and Sport Ireland. So I think a significant chunk of their funding comes from the state. So Matt Carthy and kind of others were kind of making signals that they'd be inviting them to appear to answer questions on the governance kind of turmoil and controversy. It's not clear if the Agricultural Committee has made a decision on that yet. I understand they had a quite kind of full schedule of hearings until the next Dáil recess, so it might have to be a case, if they were to invite them in, they might have to make room elsewhere or bump somebody else off a list. And they were also saying that they would be looking, if that was the case, to bring in officials from the department to answer questions, because, as I said, the department is their main funder and has recently contracted them to provide a number of services. So it's kind of, there's questions to be answered in terms of, Matt Carthy would say, there's questions to be answered over what level of oversight or accountability the department had on this situation, and kind of prior to it getting to a situation where effectively the entire board bar one has resigned.
Okay, we'll keep on top of this story here on KFM, and indeed you can read more in the Irish Times with Jack Power's articles there. Horse Sport Ireland, based in Naas, and Jack Power, reporter with Irish Times. Thanks indeed for joining us, Jack, and good morning to you. We're actually going to stay in the Naas area now because councillor for the Social Democrats on the Naas Municipal District, Bill Clear, is on the line. Good morning, Bill.
Morning, Owen. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Quite cold, as I said, but other than that, all
cold
is
on the scooter.
Cold on the scooter, indeed. Come here, out there on the Dublin Road, Donnelly Mirrors, what's happening there? It's going to be demolished, is it?
going to be demolished. Look, I'm very cognizant of people who probably are sitting home thinking today, you know, they worked, started working in Donnelly Mirrors and 55 years ago they came to Naas, and now it's being demolished. To be honest, it was left after it closed in 2007. It was left to decline really badly, you know, and there was a lot of, say, antisocial and even people living in there, and the approach roads to Naas have been blighted by this building and by the Applegreen CMEX site as well, you know. So in that I put the buildings, both those buildings on the derelict site, registered, submitted the paperwork on that, and they went on. And the owners, I believe, were unhappy with that. And anyway, agreement was reached that it be demolished. And that commenced yesterday, you know. So in kind of a way, it's good news, but sad news for people who would have worked there.
Yeah, it's a building that would have had a lot of history in the town, and a lot of people would have been employed in Donnelly Mirrors as well. So sad to see it be demolished. But ultimately, it's one of those things that, as you say, when you would be driving past it, you'd be saying, what a shame it is there where Donnelly Mirrors is. But also beside it, Concrete Pipes, that whole area, there, it has so much potential.
Huge potential, you know, and it's own mixed use, you know. And look, that building, that area will be levelled. Everything be taken away. 98% is actually, or sorry, 90% is recycled. You know, all the timber taken out, the steel taken out, and concrete ground up and used for, you know, different things. You know, obviously there'll be like asbestos, I'm sure there is, and different things, but that'll all be dealt with appropriate. The company Barnmore, I was looking up at them and talking to them, they seem to be really much, you know, to do everything the right way. They'll have to, you know, there's no two ways about it, you know. Yeah, next one is the CMEX site beside it, and I put that on the derelict site. They had planned permission for every reason. It's belonged to Applegreen. Now they have to develop a master plan, which means they come to the council together. With the council, they work together to come up with a plan to what would go there. You know, they had a planning for like truck stops and training centres before. They pulled it. TII just didn't want it there. But anyway, hopefully they're going to come back now and sort it out, and we get those two approach roads sorted out. Once the approach road to Naas, the main one, sorted out once and for all, you know, and that's where I'm heading, and keeping putting the pressure on. All right.
Good stuff. With that news then, that Donnelly Mirrors is being demolished, work started on it yesterday, so if you're driving out the Dublin Road and you're wondering what's going on where Donnelly Mirrors used to be, that is the situation. Social Democrats councillor on the Naas Municipal District, Bill Clear, thanks for that, Bill, and I'm sure there's a lot of people listening here that would have either worked in Donnelly Mirrors or know somebody that worked there, because I certainly do, and it was one of the biggest employers around the Naas area at the time. One listener has been in touch saying it's an absolute disgrace that Transport Infrastructure Ireland and the government are increasing tolls on the public for businesses when the cost of fuel, car maintenance and the cost of living is already totally unsustainable. It just shows how detached this government is from the reality of how much people are struggling to survive at the moment. It's a pity that Transport Infrastructure Ireland don't concentrate on improving our pathetic public transport, especially the train services there, says that listener.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, this Sunday, and for the next month or so, the world's eyes will focus on Qatar as the host nation of the World Cup. The first game gets underway on Sunday with Qatar playing Ecuador, and the competition has been essentially 12 years in the making, with a reported $200 billion spent on new infrastructure for the tournament. But in the lead up to the competition, the chat hasn't really been about the football. It's more about the country itself of Qatar. And on the line is Communications Manager with Amnesty International Ireland, Sam Rowe. Sam, good morning and thanks for taking our call.
Thank you for having me.
So as I read here in this article, which was actually written by Fiona Crowley of Amnesty International Ireland, she says, beneath the glamour of the spectacle lie images of abuse and discrimination of those who made this World Cup possible. It's a sight that as fans, we must not look away from. Give us a bit of the background here around Qatar.
Absolutely, yes. So since Qatar has been awarded the World Cup, we have heard reports of thousands of migrant workers who often arrive from the country in their 20s and 30s. They're healthy. They've come from places like Bangladesh and Nepal, and they work 12 to 14 hour days in desert-like conditions, often without rest, with no weekend. And then later on, they turn up deceased. And when they die, their death certificate just says something like unknown cause, cardiac arrest, something like that. And so you really have two issues here. One, that we know that a number of Qatari workers, migrant workers, I should say, have died in the construction of the World Cup, but we do not know how many because the Qatari authorities are refusing to investigate the amount and just kind of making spurious reasons why they could be deceased.
Now, the Qatari government maintained that they have made some efforts to reform their labour system, but as I understand it, the abuses remain common, and these are just abuses and deaths that we're hearing related to the World Cup, but Qatar has a long history of this.
Yes, so it is correct that they have made some changes since we've kind of alerted this and other human rights organisations have put Qatar kind of on the map. There is something called a kafala system in Qatar, and it's common across the Middle East as well, where essentially your employer owns all of your rights. So what that means is they get to decide if you leave your job, if you can leave the country, you know. So that, over the few years, has kind of been, well, removed, sort of. They've been getting rid of the kafala system slowly, the legal side of it. But in practice, many private employers are still keeping some of it in place. They're not being prosecuted. So we are still hearing cases of people asking their employer if they can change job and their employer moving them to the police station, you know, accusing them of doing something illegal. In Qatar, there is a guardianship system in place where women require a permission of a male guardian to do all sorts of things. And that could be a husband, but it can also be a father, an uncle, or just another family member. Without the permission of this male guardian, they cannot study abroad on government scholarships, work in many government jobs. They can't travel outside of the country if under the age of 25 or access reproductive health care. And it's much more difficult for a woman to seek a divorce in Qatar than it is for a man. It's also important to bring up here the rights of LGBT individuals as well. People can and do get arrested for same-sex consensual acts in Qatar. And that's a huge problem because, of course, we know there's going to be fans from all over the world coming. It's not, well, there's been some, you know, nice glad-handing about how LGBT people and fans will be safe in Qatar. It's still not clear whether they actually will in practice.
This is, as I said there in the introduction, the most common thing that's been talked about at the moment is the country of where this World Cup is taking place and not about the football, and rightly so when it is a country that has this kind of history. The question then that's being asked is, what can we do as a normal person, so to speak? What do we do with the information that we're finding out here about Qatar?
Absolutely. So we are encouraging fans, and we've been encouraging football associations as well, kind of raise their voice and take their case to Qatar and FIFA. So Qatar wanted this World Cup to be at the center stage of the world. We want people to say, Qatar, you can be at the center stage of the world, but that means you have to take human rights seriously because human rights are universal. We have a petition on our website at amnesty.ie, which you can sign to back our campaign for FIFA to put aside $440 million in compensation for the workers who have been abused. In Qatar, that's the same amount of money that's being put aside for prize money for all of the teams competing. You can absolutely as well get in touch with the FAI, with your local football club as well, to learn their views and know what their pressure they're putting on in the world of football, and just talk about it amongst friends. We will certainly be keeping an eye on what the broadcasters will be doing and how this is covered throughout the tournament to make sure that the human rights issues do not go away while the walk is on.
I'm sure you would argue as well at Amnesty International Ireland that the money is there. There's no doubt about that in Qatar. There's so much sponsorship deals going on, so many high-profile names going over there that are going to broadcast and act as pundits and ambassadors for the competition. So on the one hand, if there's that much money to be paid out for the advertising side of things, surely the money is there for those migrant workers that have either died or had their lives changed.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's been estimated, we've seen reports that FIFA are due to make around $6 billion US dollars in revenue from this tournament. So if with $600 billion, $440 million doesn't seem that much. So we know the money is there. We've been liaising, we've been discussing with FIFA for years now, trying to get them to commit to this compensation. And to be fair to Qatar, they do have a small kind of compensation procedure in place, but it's very difficult to access. You have to be still in Qatar to access this compensation system if you've been abused. And as I said, so many of the workers that have been involved in the construction of it are migrant workers who go, they work there to get money for their families back home and then leave. So they have no access to it. And neither do the families who are abroad whose relatives have passed away.
And you might recall a couple of weeks ago on this show, we broadcast the message that was sent out by the Australia Football Association condemning what is or has been going on in Qatar in terms of migrant workers, the lack of rights for women and lack of rights for those who are part of the LGBTQ plus community. This is what they had to say, some of the players of the Australian national team.
There are universal values that should define football. Values such as respect, dignity, trust, and courage. When we represent our nation, we aspire to embody these values.
As players, we fully support the rights of the LGBTI plus people. But in Qatar, people are not free to love the person that they choose.
Addressing these issues is not easy, and we do not have all the answers.
We stand with FIFPro, the Building and Woodworkers International, and the International Trade Union Confederation, seeking to embed reforms and establish a lasting legacy in Qatar.
Yeah, some of the Australian footballers there speaking a couple of weeks ago. As I say, the world's eyes will focus on Qatar now from this coming Sunday when they play Ecuador in the first match of the World Cup, and then the competition will run consecutively for the next month or thereabouts. And discussing that with us, Sam Rowe, Communications Manager with Amnesty International Ireland. Thanks indeed, Sam.
Thank you very much.
Have your say now. Text or WhatsApp Kildare today on 0833 97 97 97.
Catching up on some of the messages then that have come in on WhatsApp. Thomas Redmond in Athy says, please say a very big hello to all the nursing staff doing testing today in St. Vincent's in Athy, the carers and the wonderful catering staff providing patient meals and huge amounts of meals on wheels locally, and the administrative staff keeping the wheels moving. From business manager Thomas Redmond, he says, we listen to KFM every day and we absolutely love it. Well, that's great to hear, Thomas. And well done, and a big hello to all the staff there in St. Vincent's in Athy. And keep those messages coming in to us. Now, we referenced this in the newspaper review this morning. The number of people who have made allegations in relation to claims of abuse at Spiriton schools has risen to almost 300. Within the past week, the Spiriton congregation has been contacted by more than 60 people. It was revealed at a press conference at the RDS in Dublin yesterday. The congregation had previously disclosed that 233 men had made allegations of abuse. Social Democrats co-leader and Kildare North TD Catherine Murphy joins me now. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Owen.
Your reaction to this, I know that you were questioning Taoiseach Micheál Martin in the Dáil yesterday. Those numbers are very worrying.
They are, yes. And essentially they're people who've stayed in and felt isolated for so many years. I raised this at Leaders' Questions in the Dáil because it was a press conference yesterday, and the Spiritans are introducing a restorative justice initiative. I believe that there is an obligation on the state to do an inquiry into this, because it won't be the only religious order abuse claims have been made against since the RTE documentary. And essentially, we do need to know the extent of it and how it was, you know, kept quiet for so long. Essentially, there's a lifelong legacy for this, for people who have suffered this abuse. I mean, grief tends to be an emotion that tends to tends to be talked about in terms of where somebody has lost something, but lost a person. But in this case, you know, children have lost their innocence, they've lost that sense of security, and there's a lifetime legacy on that that can't be fully repaired. But at the very least, you need to know the extent of it, and there has to be efforts to have redress that is about healing. And I think it's important that we do have that public inquiry. The Taoiseach's response was that we were going to have a debate next week on this, and he was keen to talk to the opposition parties in relation to the kind of initiative that the state will take, because we would want to do something timely, and that is, you know, led by the people who have been abused, if you like, in terms of what their requirements are. Essentially, we're going to have that debate next week.
The Spiriton congregation, which runs Blackrock College, issued another apology to former pupils who were survived of historical sex abuse. And Liam Lally, safeguarding officer with the Spiriton, said at that press conference yesterday that the congregation had been contacted by more than 60 people since the RTE Radio 1 Blackrock Boys documentary programme was broadcast on Monday of last week. He said most of those are from Blackrock or Willow Park. And Father Martin Kelly, head of the Spiritons in Ireland, said, "What was done to you as innocent children was cruel and indefensible. We are deeply ashamed of these actions." You say that that debate is going to take place next week, Catherine, but what are we looking at here in terms of what can be done? Because I'm sure a lot of these people who were abused would say an apology is not enough, a state apology is not enough. They're just words. So what can the government actually do?
Yeah, like, I think there are a number of things, and certainly the orders have to take huge... I mean, they're the ones that are, there's a primary responsibility on in terms of where this abuse happens. Essentially, what we need to do, we need to know the extent of what happened and why it was kept quiet for so long. We also, you know, accountability is part of the restorative justice, where people have been kind of continued to be respected through their lives, who were serial abusers in some cases. And essentially, there needs to be a naming. There's also a need to look at the kind of initiatives that would be put in place that would be, you know, in terms of that would be led by survivors, if you like. We've had fairly long previous, like the Ferns Inquiry, for example, or the Ryan Report, where they took quite a long time. I think we're going to be talking to the Taoiseach about what might be done that would you know that would be timely as well, but where you include people who themselves have been abused. There needs to be truth. There needs to be transparency around this. If you're going to do justice to the people who have been abused.
Indeed, and speaking in the Dáil, Taoiseach Micheál Martin said he would give consideration to the most effective way to have a victim-led approach. He said the manner in which we go about this is important, and we have to learn lessons from previous inquiries. And the Blackrock College Past Pupils Union yesterday backed calls for that full inquiry, which it said should be independent and transparent with published findings. Catherine Murphy, Social Democrats co-leader Kildare North TD. Thanks for raising that in the Dáil yesterday, Catherine, and good morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning.